Dane, let me tell you something. I'm not a bragger, but that was the best transition I've ever been a part of.
Nice. That's saying something.
For people who don't know, hi, everybody. It's Bill and it's Dane. Welcome to the bonus hour. It's usually Wendy and myself. Wendy normally handles the board. And I'm standing where Wendy is. She handles the board. She presses the buttons. And I sit where you are, and I usually knit. That's how it usually goes during the bonus hour.
Or Sudoku, you know, whatever.
I'll do Sudoku, or I will make a vest or a sweater. I will knit a vest or a sweater. All available on my Etsy page. So there's this transitional fader. There's this button where you have to move it from up to down. And I know to the casual listener, you go, well, that can't be hard. But it's split-second timing. It's precision. You have to do it at exactly the right time. And I'm usually, on a scale of 1 to 10, about a 4 or maybe a 5. That last one, that one's going into my... my resume.
Noted.
I'm going to change my resume.
And it has the excellence, and it has been noted.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Yes.
I appreciate that.
Nice.
So, as we mentioned, Dane is sitting in for Wendy. She'll be back on Monday. Moments ago, we had on J. Keith Van Stratton and Helen Hong. They are the hosts of a podcast, a game show quiz podcast called Go Fact Yourself. That's right. I said it right. Go Fact Yourself. I said if there was a Mount Rushmore for game show hosts, whose four heads would be on there? And I thought we did a pretty good job of mentioning your classics.
Yeah, there's a lot of great guys and girls, right? So, but there's a lot of individuals out there that came into our home. I mean, it was a very big and powerful and popular segment of the entertainment side, right? For a
game
long
shows,
time, the
huge.
Game shows, it was as big as it gets.
Yep. The first name that came to mind immediately for all of us was Alex Trebek, the longtime host of Jeopardy.
Do you feel, and people come down on this, that, you know, obviously an intelligent guy and he's there and he's a great host, but that he's privy to the answers and all that, and he sort of does it in a slightly and maybe appropriately condescending way where he acts like, well, no, it
no,
was actually
Buenos Aires.
Right, right. How much
Buenos
of this
Aires.
Stuff do you think he actually knows?
He knows because he's got it on a sheet. That said, He sets the table beautifully for the toughest game show on television, right? I mean, that's not the easiest job in the world.
I'm sorry. It's Parabellum, of course.
Portobello mushrooms. Right. I'm sorry. I will also say that when we found out recently, the word was disclosed that he is sick. You know, he is suffering from some cancer, and hopefully that's taken care of. Hopefully. But it made me appreciate him even more, realizing, uh-oh, there will be a day. I mean, I already kind of knew this, but the mere fact that, uh-oh, there will be a day where he is not the host of Jeopardy anymore, that made me very, very sad.
And who would you think there would be? There's so many fans of it, so many fans of him and fans of that show in general. Who do you think they get, like a Ken Jennings or something, to be the host, or rotating? Who would do the job?
He mentioned a couple of names of people that I had never heard of before. Because they asked him, I think they asked him prior to the disclosure that he was battling cancer. They said, one day when you retire, you know, there's huge shoes to fill. Who's going to fill in for you? And he said, well, if I get my way, I would like it to be. And he mentioned a couple of names of people I've never heard. I don't know who they are. One is a local television personality in Los Angeles whose name I didn't recognize. And I don't remember who the other one was. But that's a tough one, filling in for him or succeeding him.
Well, so much about what it takes to be, I think, in that team photo of a game show host is you've got to be kind of fun and enthusiastic. But he's got
or this, have a name like Wink Martindale,
right,
where you can only be a game show host. There's no, you can't be a surgeon named Wink Martindale.
You've got to be able to do the small talk, a little joking around about people's hometown and
right.
the kids at home and all
right.
that. And he's able to do some of that. The humor is kept at an appropriate kind of low level, and he just does it in a very serious and distinguished way that I think is necessary for Jeopardy. It's an odd fit. I don't know if
yes,
you can just plug
is.
Anybody in there.
Yes, it is. So his name was mentioned immediately. You know whose name was not mentioned, except on the text line quite often, was Pat Sajak.
Well, and
the
long
host of Wheel of Fortune.
Well, we were thinking, you got your Wink Martindales and you've got your Gene Rayburn, some of the classic TV guys, you know, kind of stalking the set with the microphone that's like 2.5 feet long with a ping pong ball on top, right? And making jokes and shag carpeting everywhere.
Right.
There's, I think, a love affair with that stuff.
That's Gene Rayburn you're referring to.
Yes, right, right. You know, and others of those sets when you see that kind of retro set.
Yeah. Remember Tom Kennedy?
Yeah, which
remember one? Him? Tom Kennedy was the host of several shows over the years.
Was it Card
he
Sharks?
Always wore no. What was the name of the show that most people would know him for? He did several. And his brother is also a game show host. His brother was Jack Nars.
Well, when you're in the business.
Right. You get your brother in. Right. All right, I'll host your game show, but you got to give one to my brother, too. He was the brother of a game show host named Jack Nars who used to host Beat the Clock.
Oh, I wonder how that does work. You know, like Frank Stallone gets jobs or like Patrick Swayze's kind of bizarro right. older brother gets jobs. Right. It's like for maybe like the cable access show you get these guys.
But Tom Kennedy, I liked him the most because he wore sunglasses all the time that had like a strawberry tint to them. Very 1970s. Like today, if a guy goes, I'll be a host of your show, but you got to let me wear my strawberry glasses, they'd go, I don't think so. I think we'll go in a different direction. It's killing me that I can't think of any of the shows he hosted. None of them were like classic game shows. They were always the ones that lasted a year or two and then just kind of faded away. But I always liked him because he was so stuck in the 70s, you know?
You wonder where they, because I think the foundation of it is you have to have a solid show. Mm-hmm. A solid show that you can do again and again, and the results all come out different, and it feels right. different with different personalities.
Right.
You know, and so you're looking at them, and when you think, okay, some of the ones that have transcended not only those iconic hosts, but also have become modern day, you know, where people understand from different generations, you know, like your, you know, like the $10,000 pyramid or something, like where you get
That's a classic.
Like Dick Clark, okay, but he's so much more than just a game show. It's like Ryan Seacrest does a bunch of stuff.
Right.
He's not just
Dick
a game
Clark
show.
Dick Clark was a spectacular producer and, of course, influencer to the music world, but did a great job on the pyramid.
Yep.
Right?
And so where do you, Bill, rank these other shows that are a little more modern day, but still, when you think about them, for those moments in time, they captured everybody's attention. Everyone was aware of it. Everyone mm-hmm. wanted to be on it. Everyone watched it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, shows like you mentioned Pat Sajak with Wheel of Fortune. There was a time when that was like primetime television. It was on like three nights a week in primetime. And Pat Sajak and, of course, Vanna White, you know, who was like the hottest, you know, mm-hmm. game show lady. But you look at So Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Remember when that phenomenon with Regis Philbin? It was as big as it gets. It was primetime TV. And then you've got...
Didn't that start out, it was going to be a summer replacement show with Regis Philbin hosting. And it took off so big that the memory of it that I have, it was on once or twice a week, and it was such a huge ratings getter that they moved it to five nights a week, and then a syndicated daytime version as well.
Yeah, it was and Regis was already like Regis and Kat. He already had a daytime show, but I think
he was really good as the host.
He was. You know, he was the glue, I think.
What's your answer?
Right. Who was a
millionaire? We've waited enough.
Right. And then you had it where it was, you know, I think the kind of questions weren't quite Jeopardy level where people felt like they could play along. And I know that stuff.
Right.
And you had the opportunity, a significant sum of money, right? You weren't just winning a brand new car.
Right.
You were winning $1 million, right?
That's a lot.
And then you had Regis, who at that point, I think, even though he was up in age, even at that point, was kind of ascending into really what's superstardom. It was just one of those things where like the country got together and it was more than just a game show.
It was a big deal. Now, do you remember what show right after, when that became a huge hit, then the other networks went, well, now we have to have a big game show hit. Do you remember what the other one was that took off right after it?
Well, I don't know if this was right after, but then you think like Deal or No Deal was another one of those shows that became a show that was on, and then it was, you know, where
that was with Howie Mandel.
With Howie Mandel, which, and I think of him, I don't think of him.
And Meghan Markle, by the way. Did you know that?
Yeah, she was in a few
episodes. She was one of the girls, one of the suitcase girls. Yeah.
I'm sure that was part of the resume item that Prince Harry was like, yes. The girl that can travel well.
Right. The suitcase. I like the one who can travel. Bring me the one who can travel.
And you don't put Howie, and Howie's great, right?
Yeah.
But you don't necessarily put him in the same category as like a Dick Clark, right?
No.
As far as like, you know,
I do not.
Entertainment importance.
Right.
But he's not a guy that's defined, even though he's really found maybe, I don't want to say his calling, but he's great at the game show stuff. Not everybody's good at that.
The show that I was referring to that after Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was such a hit, do you remember the phenomena that was The Missing Link? That was a British woman who came on, a very stern-looking British woman, very like headmistress-seeming, and she would ask you questions, and I don't remember all the rules, but I do remember her catchphrase was, you are the missing link, goodbye, and then you were done. As soon as she said that to you, out.
I mean, I remember...
You can't be on TV anymore, get out.
Yeah, I remember it. And some of these shows are hits in other places, in other markets.
Oh, yeah, right.
Overseas, and then they kind of tweak it and make it kind of fun. And
Have you ever seen footage of Japanese game shows? There's no rules whatsoever. It's complete pandemonium, and it's fun to watch.
Well, it also, you got to cringe, too, is, you know, where it's a game show and the people who lose, like, have to sit on a steak knife. You know, right. There's always, like,
there's always a painful element.
It's like, what?
Right. If you lose, you have to, your arm gets closed in a car door. Right. No, wait, you can't do that. No, we can.
I think that's where it's as many things as we have in common and are able to celebrate and enjoy each other's culture. There are differences, right, as far as tolerance for pain-based entertainment.
Right. Yep. Several times during the bonus hour, for various reasons, we have mentioned this game show. I hope you'll remember it. I hope you watched it when you were younger. The Hollywood Squares with Peter Marshall. Wasn't that fun?
That was. Now,
wasn't that fun?
Bill, was that? Here it is. Sometimes, you know, the message is sort of encased in like a candy coating of a game show.
Of tic-tac-toe.
Right, where it was really.
Do you remember when you realized when you were watching Hollywood Squares and you just go, well, this is just tic-tac-toe.
Which is the.
It's just red buttons and Charlie Weaver playing tic-tac-toe.
But it was also kind of a talk show without the normal, you know, you've got the table with the mug and the conversation. Yeah. You know, they have these mini conversations with these mini celebrities.
Yeah.
And, you know, ask them about like what's going on or what they're doing.
Right.
So they weren't just answering questions, right? They were kind of pushing their whatevers, you know, at the same
time. I always
liked
when they would pack, like sometimes most squares on the Hollywood Squares had one celebrity. You either had Paul Lynde or you had Rosemarie. Pick your favorite celebrity. But every once in a while, there'd be a square that would have two or sometimes three, like the Hudson Brothers. They put all three Hudson Brothers in one square. It got very crowded in there. You couldn't even breathe.
Had you ever been, sometimes when when you go as a kid to, let's say, Wrigley Field or Comiskey Park for the first time, and it just seems so much smaller in person, more intimate.
Right.
Where imagine, or a news set, right? Where you get there and you're like, whoa, it seems bigger on TV. Just imagine how cramped it really was.
Well, I always felt bad for the celebrities. Like, if you were on the ground level, that was easy to get to. So they put the older celebrities in there. But every once in a while, you'd see an older guy. They'd put him up on the top row. And I'm like, don't make UB Blake climb all those stairs to get to the top row. Give him something low. Come on.
And then you got to think, what category of celebrity, you know, had whatever kind of, you know, film or television career that allowed them to be a celebrity in the first place, but was also capable of being, an A-list game show host.
Yes.
And then also a contestant or a celebrity. And like, so Richard Dawson is one of those unique individuals.
Who could.
And you got to think Family Feud, right? That was one of those shows that, again, I think ascended to like national prominence. And then he built into like, I don't know if you could do it the same way these days, because he always seemed... He seemed kind of slightly inebriated. He was always super friendly.
Super friendly.
And in the family base, so you'd have like the wife and the husband and three kids and maybe the grandma or the aunt. And everyone was fine with him absolutely like
French kissing the guests.
Every single, come on in here, love for the
room. Come here, you.
Right. And then the girls would all be, the ladies would all be, I guess, looking forward to it.
I don't remember any opposition to that ever.
Anderson never was able to pull that off.
No. Louis behaves like a gentleman. When he's hosting those shows.
Come on.
Now, here's something that I remember that no one else seems to remember. During the heyday of Hollywood Squares, so this would have been the late 60s, the early 70s, every once in a while they would do a kids' version called Storybook Squares, where it was still Peter Marshall, but when the celebrities would come on, they would be dressed like Robin Hood or Humpty Dumpty. it was amazing because it was all the same stars you got used to seeing on the Hollywood Squares, but now they're doing a kid's version.
You'd see Richard Dawson dressed as an elf or something.
Right. Paul Lynde's humor sometimes lost on the children. Not all the time, but the guests that would come on to be contestants on the regular Hollywood Squares were adults, but on Storybook Squares, you know, it was an 8-year-old and a 7-year-old, and for some reason, Paul Lynde didn't play as well.
There are so many things that you aren't necessarily, that you just don't take it in the same way when you're a kid.
Right.
And Paul Lynde was absolutely, you know, was great, right? And so those shows, I think adults were able to like watch.
I thought of a show that Tom Kennedy hosted, and I didn't, just for the record, you've been watching me. I did not Google it.
Yes.
Because I've said many times, when I can't think of something, I never Google it. I force myself to think of it because I'm afraid that if I start Googling things, I'll just stop thinking.
In our family, they'll be like, what's this? And I'm like, the internet knows. You ask the internet.
You do that to your kids?
Well,
I go out of my way whenever I can't think of anything. People go, your phone is right there. Look it up. And I go, Tom Kennedy, the show that I think most people would know him for. Now, we're going back in time a little bit. This is the late 70s. Was a great, great, great game show called Split Second.
Ooh.
Does that ring a bell at all?
was there
at 60 minutes.
No, right. I get that. But I think there was, so how did it work? How did the show work?
I don't remember all the specifics. I remember in the beginning of Split Second, they had a large group of people on stage all answering a question, and the ones who didn't get it right were eliminated until they got it down to a more, much like what's happening with the Democratic debates. It's almost the exact same template for what's going on with the debates.
That's not a terrible idea, but no, just for a time saving.
Right. So all I remember is you had in the beginning large group of people, and the people that were on stage answering the questions were the actual contestants. They weren't celebrities. But then once they got it wrong, the group of 16 became a group of 11 or 12, then a group of 6, then a group of 2, then a group. So it was process of elimination to some extent. But I don't remember specifically much beyond that. Does that ring a bell at all? Split Second on NBC?
The word obviously does. I think I can see people getting eliminated, but I don't know. I'll have to look it up on the...
And because Tom Kennedy had those sunglasses on that I was describing, sometimes if you get an answer wrong, you could stay on stage and he couldn't tell because of the sunglasses. He couldn't decipher
who was... So it was like a game show on the honor system. All right, yeah. If you feel like you got it wrong, move out.
Right. If not, stay where you are. Very confusing. All right. We'll take a break. Kim Gordon will stop by. She'll give you the news and then more discussion. It's Bill and Dane in for Wendy on WG. It's Bill Leff. It's Dane Neal. Dane is sitting in for Wendy. Kim, before I introduce you really, really quickly, we were talking about game shows, and I mentioned a show that was very, very popular for a year and maybe two, and then it faded away, and I refer to that show as The Missing Link. It's The Weakest Link.
I love that show.
Missing Link is something else.
I loved her.
Remember that show? This was a... I described her as almost like the headmistress of a school, of a British school.
Exactly.
Short-cropped blonde hair, very stern-looking, and seemed very disappointed in you if you didn't know the answer to a question.
You are the weakest link.
Yeah, that's
goodbye.
It.
That was it.
Yeah,
was
okay, it. So Missing Link, that was that kind of caveman genetic show.
That was a game show with apes that they had for a while.
Do you know that one of my bucket list items is to be on the $100,000 pyramid?
Would that be fun?
Oh, my
wouldn't
God.
That be fun?
Yes.
Good thing wait until there's 100,000. It used to be the $10,000 pyramid.
Right. And I love Michael Strahan.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you notice, though, that the questions...
Oh, much easier. That's why I feel
so
like I could go on
easier.
And do much better now.
It's amazing. It's like that on almost every game show now.
Yeah.
They've simplified the questions to the point where, like in the old days when they would do that that Final Thunder round or whatever it's called, where you win the big money.
Final Thunder.
I don't remember what it's called.
when you go to the winner's circle on the pyramid?
Is it just called winner's circle? I don't know what it's called.
Well, it's your chance, you know.
But if somebody did get it, and it was rare that somebody got the top prize, it happened with a second or two to spare.
Right.
Now they get it in half the time.
Yeah, I know.
So quick and easy.
But that's why I feel like...
Now's your time.
Now's my chance.
To become rich quickly.
Yes. Yep. Right. $100,000.
It's wouldn't that be nice? We're talking about game shows. We had on two people who are the hosts of a podcast called Go Fact Yourself. I'll say it again slowly. Go Fact Yourself. It's okay to say. J. Keith Van Stratton and Helen Hong were the guests earlier.
Well, I'm wondering, I know Kim's got to run, but you just wonder, you know, for that whole, you know, the Richard Dawson situation, is like if everyone felt like maybe they had to, they were compelled to let, you know, Richard kiss them and call them darling and dear or whatever.
Yes.
Or if some people were like, I hope I don't have to, here he comes.
What if they sprayed him with mace as he was coming toward them?
Like pepper,
how would that have looked?
Just pepper sprayed him.
Right.
I didn't tell
you you could kiss me, Richard Dawson.
Okay, so there are some celebrities that have, like I said, you know, a career, some kind of notoriety. They have the capabilities, which I think it's a unique skill set, to be a game show host, and then also they're also a great contestant. And then in the 70s and maybe early 80s, there almost was a total separate category of people who really weren't doing anything on the entertainment side.
Right.
They were just professional guests, you know, like a Fannie Flagg or a Brett Butler.
Yeah.
Like what did, like where?
Well, Brett Butler was, you mean, you don't mean Brett Butler. You mean Brett. I'm blanking on her name. Jack Klugman's wife.
Well, this would have been, and maybe she physically did resemble Jack Klugman, so maybe. she was on
Brett
Summers. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah,
right?
Brett Summers.
Yeah. So that's it. Where, you know, for like Match Game, you know, they had these group of people, and it seemed like that's what they were doing 5 days a week.
Right.
And they didn't seem
they were just Nipsey Russell was just a guest on game shows.
But Nipsey was
forever.
Like a comedian, you know, where
poet.
Yeah, where
he made his money in poetry. That's where the real money is right. to be made.
He was a poetry baron.
Yes,
but then there were some of these people that's really the only place you saw him.
Right,
as game show kind of contestant or squares.
Patty Deutsch, do you remember her? She had a funny voice and red hair. She was also on Laughing for a while,
okay.
so she had a legitimate job. But now most of the people hosting the shows are stand-up comics, like Drew Carey and Joel McHale.
And what do you think, as a person who has excelled in that discipline, what is it about someone who has that background that either makes it a successful transition or mm-hmm. maybe gives them the tools to be able to do it?
I think the ability to think fast, you know, because... Even though the questions are scripted, there, you know, there's all that surrounding mass that needs to work for the show to work. So if you're quick-witted, I used to work with Drew Carey all the time. Well, not all the time, but several times doing stand-up. I never thought this is the guy that will someday be a game show host. And yet, whenever I see him on there, he seems to be enjoying himself. He's doing it for years.
Well, it seemed like when he first said it, because he had one of the more successful shows, Drew Carey show, you know, doing all those things, it seemed like an odd choice.
Yeah.
It seemed almost like a safe, like, well, here's a steady gig, you know, but then again, if you can extend that, I don't know what the pay scale is for these things, but it seems like it's a pretty good gig.
Yeah, they do pretty good. All right, I'm going to run some obscure ones past you. I'm not looking these up. These are just game shows that over the years I remembered that I enjoyed very much, but nobody else did but me, so they canceled them. See if you remember these. All right?
Okay.
Do you remember one called The Magnificent Marble Machine?
No. Now, was this, you talk about the moving parts, and we were talking off the air a little bit about like Deal or No Deal, where you don't have any questions. It's just you pick numbers.
Right.
It's just you get an offer
all it is luck.
On the stats, right?
Right.
The marble machine, I think, would be great because what it does is you've got the familiarity of a game we play all the time.
Marbles?
There's just a jar with a bunch of marbles, and you need to guess how many are in there.
That's the whole game.
That's the whole game.
That was it.
Incorrect. And they just have run through about 50 people.
The Magnificent Marble Machine was a game that had a gigantic, and I don't just mean gigantic, I mean it took up the whole studio, pinball machine. So you would answer questions to be the one to play the Magnificent Marble Machine at the end. And if you did, you play this huge, like five-story tall pinball machine. It was unbelievable to watch. And I don't remember who hosted it. I just remember really loving it. And then it was only on for a short span of time. The other thing that was cool about it was I don't remember what role exactly the celebrity had in being on the show, but for some reason, He was almost always the guest on the show.
Well, sometimes in the celebrities, sometimes their role is where they're offering up their answers.
Right. They help.
Sometimes they're the coach.
Right.
You know, they're along with them. You know, you get teamed up with one.
Right.
And sometimes you're just kind of eye candy.
Do you remember a show called One Versus 100? This would have been about maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah, that was not that long ago. Right, yeah, right, okay.
That's where they had this giant wall constructed.
And people would be eliminated.
Right.
You know.
You would ask questions, and much like I was saying with Tom Kennedy's show with Split Second, it started out where it was you versus 100 people, but then based on every question, the number kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller as dollar values were rising. But it was just, again, much like Magnificent Marble Machine, the audacity of a giant wall with people all over it just was so outrageous to me.
Well, and you think about think about all the moving parts with something like that. All of these different guests, all of these different people that have to be vetted and sign waiver forms and all that.
Yeah.
Whereas Deal or No Deal, no questions. You just need to have a Rolodex of however many, was it 20, 30, I couldn't remember, smokes model types, that can hold a suitcase and stand
for maybe 40
minutes. And then you've got something that's pretty, you don't always need the talent, the star power of a Charles Nelson Reilly,
to sell your product.
And so what did he do? What was he just a comedian?
He was like a Broadway actor.
Okay.
You know, who
seemed like they would have, like after the show, they would head to the bar, drink or play cards. It just seemed like that type of 70s stuff, you know?
Without a doubt. Charles Nelson Reilly did little bit parts in shows. Like there was a TV version of The Ghost and Mrs. Muir. I don't know if you remember that, but he was on that. There were little with Hope Lang. There were little TV shows that he would get little guest starring roles on.
As like the bio writer for him. So does this sound accurate?
You may know our next guest is a frequent guest star on the TV's Ghost of Mrs. Muir. Please welcome Charles Nelson Reilly.
Right.
Or CNR, as he was just known in the time. Do you remember this? Here, again, I know these are very obscure, so don't feel bad if you don't know them, because I think I'm the only one who remembers any of these. The Money Maze.
Ooh.
You don't remember the Money Maze?
I'm trying to think of, in my mind, just like the Jar of Marbles. I'm trying to think of like, well, what?
The Money Maze was a giant maze, and there were, within the maze, there were
like
five or six.
Like a dollar bill with a fisherman pulling it through the maze?
No, there, in the maze, and it was just like you imagine. It was a human-sized maze, and within the maze, there were these towers, five towers that all had dollar values on them. So you would play with a partner, and if you won, it was you and a partner against somebody else and a partner. If you won, you got to play in the money maze, and you would direct the person to try to find the towers. Like you'd stand on a platform, and you'd yell to your partner, "Go left, keep going left, go past the wall. Now take a right, now go left, now hit the button." You know, it was like that. It was very exciting, and it was hosted by George Clooney's father, Nick Clooney.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so I didn't, you know, I knew, I'm trying to think of like Rosemary Clooney.
I bet a young George Clooney probably got to hang out there on the set of the Money Maze and probably just run around in the maze when he was a little kid, I would imagine.
I'm sure he had access to all that stuff. Jeez, I didn't know, other than being George Clooney's dad, that he...
And really, Rosemary Clooney's nephew.
I mean, other than the family connections, I didn't realize he did anything.
Oh, like yeah.
That.
Oh, yeah. All kinds of fun stuff. What was the one where they were in a supermarket, and it wasn't a real supermarket, it was like it was a set made up to look like a supermarket, and you had to run around the aisles and find different items and put them in your cart?
Well, you know,
would it be Supermarket Sweep? Does that sound right?
That sounds right.
That's a real show,
yeah,
right?
That sounds right. But you know, there's a bunch of different game shows build that sort of experience into.
Yeah,
you know, where you know, like Price is Right would have like shopping related
quizzes
or things that you sort of had to do.
Yeah, but with this, you had a shopping cart, and they would give you like a list of items that you had to find in the supermarket, and you had to put them in your cart and then cross a finish line.
Well, I mean, the modern, you know, Guy's Grocery Game, so Guy Fieri does on like Food Network, they do that. Really?
Yeah, they're still doing that?
Yeah, that's
good.
Like, he's got an actual grocery store in Santa Rosa that they've outfitted, so he doesn't have to drive far from home, just shows up.
Wow.
And then in the bonus round, what you're able to do is you have this list of things that you have to get, and you get an X amount in a sort of time limit, right, 30 seconds, and if you can do it, you leave there with your $20,000 or whatever.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
That's not bad at all.
So the other one that I did want to mention, and we talked about with, you know, our people from the podcast, they were talking about, you know, whether it's, was it Meet the Press, is the longest running television show. When you think about some of these game shows, they have a longevity that is far beyond even your soap operas, at least for some of them. And one that has kind of had that torch passed, not unlike The Price is Right, is Let's Make a Deal. Right? Monty Hall was, and that's a basic kind of guess the price situation, but they always have the, hey, what's in your purse kind of thing. You know,
I know.
If you could have a paperclip in your purse.
Right. Now, is somebody still doing it?
Yes.
I think Wayne Brady, I think, was the host.
Well, he's the host. He still is, and he's been the host for maybe 10 years
or so. So that's still a thing. Like, he'll say to somebody, if somebody has a cucumber.
Usually it's like a credit card.
You know? Oh, okay.
But then again, if sometimes it's super random. You know,
do people still dress up in crazy costumes to attend the tapings?
They always do. You know,
why is that? That has no bearing on the rest of the show. Why are they dressed?
I think it has a bearing on whether you get picked to participate.
Oh.
So if, let's say you come in as a, you know, ketchup and mustard, you know, as a...
Yeah,
as
they
a
would put you on the TV.
A lot of times it's couples, and, you know, and so you have some sort of couple. You know, I'm the front end of the horse and she's the back, or however you do it. And so then they get up, and that's a funny thing to talk about. So what are you? You know, and they're like, I'm a computer programmer. No, I mean, you're dressed up as a crazy clown or whatever.
Yeah.
And so they have that, and we talked about kind of the sensibilities you need to be, and Wayne Brady's, he's good at that. You know,
yeah,
he's good at
be.
That whole kind of seat of your pants, let's have some fun kind of thing. Yeah.
Several years ago when I was still doing stand-up, my wife and I were trying to decide, we weren't married yet, but we were trying to decide whether we would live in Los Angeles, which I don't know if you know this, Dane, it's the heart of show business, is Los Angeles, California.
Well, the Peoria is the recognized second. Hollywood of the Midwest.
Right, that's what they call the Hollywood of the Midwest. So we were trying to decide if we wanted to move to California or stay here in Chicago. So I went on a pilot program for 3 months to just kind of get a feel of the area to see. And while I was there, I'd always wanted to be on Jeopardy, so I went and I took the Jeopardy test. So you sit in what looks like a classroom.
Is it like a kiosk in the mall, and then you just
It's at the studio where they film Jeopardy. You're essentially backstage at Jeopardy, but they don't shoot every day, so they do it on the days they're not shooting. They bring in goofs like me to take the test to see if you can be on the show.
I haven't considered it, but it probably is important just from, like, let's make some decent shows that if you just pick a bunch of random people, it might be the whole show and no one gets anything right.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know.
We've done that here when we played WG and Jeopardy. We've had guests that haven't gotten anything right.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So I went there. I'm trying to remember what – there was some magazine article – about if you want to get accepted as a game show panelist, the things to do and what not to do.
Okay.
And I made sure to do all the things I was supposed to do and not do any of the things I wasn't supposed to do.
So no bomb threats? No?
A minimal amount of bomb threats. You know, you want to play by their rules, you know.
Profanity at a minimum.
I took the test and I came within just a couple of correct answers of being on. So they took me and four others, a total of five of us, and they said, look, you guys just missed the cut. You just missed by one or two
so
answers.
So you get to be on this show.
They let us pick between three different shows that they also shot there.
Gotcha.
The one that I chose was a show, I don't know if you'll remember this, it only lasted a year, Quiz Kids Challenge. So it was based on an old show that used to be on the radio years ago called The Quiz Kids, by which you get three kids and three adults, and they play against each other. And the kids always, always, always win.
Is it kind of like the Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader kind of thing?
Well, they would pick, the kids got to pick the categories that, like, they would meet you, and then based on their talking to you, they would pick the category. So for me, because we got to sit down and talk and they asked me questions, they decided that the category that I would know least amount would be heavy metal rock. So that was my category. However, somehow, every question they asked me was a question that I knew the answer to.
You happen to have that Blue Oyster Cult album?
It's the craziest thing. Like, I still remember, I don't remember what my first two questions were, but my hardest question, I think they called it the backbreaker or something like that, the one that was something where they played a snippet of a song, and I knew that it was David Coverdale, which is weird, because there's no reason I should know that, but I knew that. But overall, we lost because it's the cumulative score of the three adults against the three kids. So even though I beat the kid I was going up against, the other two adults lost. The sad part is every single prize that I won on the show was a company that went out of business within a year. Like, I won a lifetime supply, of Hulk Hogan vitamins. No, are you jealous? Are you a little jealous?
What kind of claims did those make? You'll be running. Hulkamania is running wild.
Well, I'll tell you, brother. They said it would change my voice, but so far it hasn't changed it.
You have 24-inch pythons, right? And then Mean Gene comes in. Take it from me, the Hulk fighters.
I'll never forget because cell phones weren't the thing yet. Cell phones had not been existed yet, so you had to use payphones there at the studio. So I called home to tell my wife, and we're sworn to secrecy, like whether or not we win or lose. Whenever you play a game show, you have to sign this form saying you won't tell anybody.
Of course.
But what did I care? They're going to take away my Hulk Hogan vitamins. So I called my wife and I told her that I was on that show and what I had won. I won. There was something from a furniture company that folded within days of winning. There was the Hulk Hogan vitamins, and then there was a third thing, and they also went bankrupt very soon thereafter.
Did you get like a outdoor patio set? Nothing.
Nothing. Geez. And I said to the producers, I said, I want so badly to win something from Dicker and Dicker of Beverly Hills. And they just stared at me, and I said, you know, Dicker and Dicker of Beverly Hills, the sponsor of every game show of all time, and they had no idea what I was talking about. Because that used to be, there was a time where, if you're on a game show, that was the supplier of all prizes.
Well, were they, do they really not know, or because they're maybe too close to the forest and the trees?
They were all in their 20s.
Are they indignant? They were just Dicker and Dicker. That's old.
That doesn't exist, caveman. Go fight a mastodon and come back when you're done and tell us more.
Those guys are losers. They're dickers.
But still, to be that close, I was just, here's the crazy thing. During the process of taking this test, there was a woman next to me that was just going through it so quickly. She was just writing down her answers like it was no big deal. And there were a couple I didn't know the answers to. And I know that cheating is bad, but I really wanted to be on Jeopardy. So I'm like, just look at her paper and see what she wrote. And I'm like, no, why would she know the right answers? That's just some lady from Pomona, California. She doesn't know. Right. I'm just guessing. But then she was the one lady in our whole group that did get enough correct to be on Jeopardy.
Oh.
I know.
And you never know. I mean, I'll watch Jeopardy, and there are shows where I don't know most of, I don't know almost all. And there are shows where, like you said, with your heavy metal category,
yeah.
where and there's been times where you're like amazing the people in the room, like, you know, you just happen to know the stuff.
Do you, when they show the three contestants on Jeopardy, do you in your head go, well, that's the lady who's going to win. It's obvious, look at that lady. She's going to win it all. Well, those other two people, I don't even think they're going to get any points. That lady's going to win.
Well, they're all obviously they've taken the test, yeah. right? And they cheated or not or whatever. And so they're all smart. You know, they all can get some of them. But I think it depends. I don't know. It's so broad range as far as the different topics. If you don't know them in advance, I think you just have to
have. But then every once in a while, like that Jamie Holzhauer guy comes out of nowhere. And I didn't think he was ever going to lose. I went, this guy's going to be on that show for 5 years.
You wonder if there's a way, just through, you know, the access to the past episodes and all that stuff, where you can kind of say, like, well, this is more likely than not that it'll right. be a topic about this, or here's sort of our range into it.
Right.
Did you see that documentary on The Price is Right, where the guy had just, he was just such a devotee of the program, and he
yeah.
watched every single, and he knew that they only have so many prizes, and here's the cost of the prizes. And so he was able to price match all of that stuff.
Genius.
And he had spreadsheets and everything like that. So he wasn't cheating.
Right.
He just was doing a lot
of
research.
He was like a savant for that show.
Yep, where he could blurt out, oh, it's $49.99. He knew all the prizes and everything yeah. that they had. And he was able to do some research and really affect the outcome of the game. So, but it just seems like Jeopardy, just the topics are so random.
Right.
But with the
champion guy, this Jamie Holzhauer guy.
Wasn't it that he was training for it, kind
well,
of?
Well, I think what helped him the most was that not only was he smart and fast, but they even said when they would introduce him every day, a professional sports gambler from Las Vegas, Nevada, please welcome, they called him James, his name's Jamie, James Holzhauer. So I think the mere fact that he was a gambler and willing to take risks, like most people, when you think about what's at stake
if
during
that
game,
exactly sure,
you go, I got to play this kind of safe because this could knock me out. If I don't get this right, then I'm out of the game. But with him, because he was so used to taking risks and being confident about it, I think that's what put him over the edge.
Well, he had to be really informed and smart.
There's that too. Smart and fast.
Because you think you could get away with that a couple times. But like
but
you
he
said,
was doing it every yeah. day for a month and a half. Yeah,
at some point, it's going to be like,
but I swear, like I watched, I didn't see the first few episodes he was on, but once it started to be a story, I go, I got to, and I never, then I'm like, I'm watching this guy every day. I thought he was going to be on there for years. I went, no one's going to catch this guy. It's yeah. impossible.
So the person that replaced him, was that a person that just had a one-off amazing
That was
thing?
A lady from here who did obviously well the day she beat him. And then I think her run lasted a week, maybe a week and a couple of days, but not much beyond that. And then they just did this, they do a teen tournament every year. And there was a girl on who sounded exactly like Bjork.
She wear a strange feathered costume.
No, she didn't wear any feathered costumes. But like when they showed her at the beginning, like I'm watching, and like I said, I'm always trying to figure out just by the look. So I bet that guy's going to be the big one. No, it's going to be her. It's yeah. going to be her. So they showed her, and she just
it's
seemed
like the
another
Dunkin'
kid.
Donut raise it, like the United
States. Right.
It's going to be Cuppy Cup.
It's the same thing. And Terry always says to me, shouldn't you focus more on the correct answers than trying to just look at three people and figure out who's the smartest based on the way they look? And the answer to that is yes. It doesn't mean I'm going to stop.
As that was going on, and they, it was inevitable over time that they started making those comparisons to like Ken Jennings, who's the undisputed,
yes.
unstoppable, incomparable, you know, champion or whatever. Is that they made those like, well, he's catching him, and at this rate, he'll have him by whatever. And you wonder if Ken Jennings had a just kind of a good. Well, it's great to see people do well, or if he was sort of 72 Dolphinsing it, where he's like, I hope nobody wins.
These monsters trying to beat my right. my mark. He was somewhere in the middle. Like I read interviews with him where he was saying, "No, this is great for the game, and it's fun to watch him." But then every once in a while, there was an element of that.
And for the
How
listeners,
dare he be
that
so
may
close.
Not be super familiar. Like the 72 Dolphins are the only undefeated yep. Super Bowl champion team, and they got together as a collective and they would throw a party.
They still do
every year.
They right? still do
the remaining members, right?
Yeah.
When the last team loses. They have a big party because they're the only ones, right?
Right?
So they don't want anyone to,
right?
You know, it's not like, well, it'd be good for the game. Forget about it.
I can't figure out if that party is just bathed in bitterness or if relief. I would do the same thing. What would you do if you wanted, if you were on that team and you wanted that piece of history, and there was a team that was close and close? And I remember a couple of years ago, the Patriots
got all the way to the Super Bowl.
They
won undefeated throughout the season, and they lost the Super Bowl to the Giants.
Yeah,
and so it was like, I don't know. I guess you walk into that room with everybody wearing pastel Miami Vice related costumes. Yep. Older guys,
the aqua and the orange
with championship rings. You'd be like, who's the best?
Right,
you're the best.
You know,
no,
it's
you
us.
Are.
No, I know. Thank you to all the texters who pointed out that the show Supermarket Sweep got the title right on that day and was hosted by Mark Summers, no relation to Brett Summers, who, as you pointed out, wasn't just married to, but also looked like Jack Klugman.
Also, who's the guy, Mark Wahlberg,
yeah,
who does, what's that show about it's not a game show, but it's that PBS show where you got junk that's worth stuff, is no relation to the actual Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, right. They're separate Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
Right.
You think in Hollywood, right, you change your name. Or you just say, like, yeah, maybe.
Right. He should change his name to I'm not that Mark Wahlberg.
Like, how does that work from the celebrity side of things? And Bill, for the listeners, has been in movies and things like that. At some point, are you forced to make a change? You just say, like, well, maybe some... Hey, I thought we had Mark Wahlberg speaking at our Christmas party.
It's a different Wahlberg. Well, within the guild, within the Screen Actors Guild, you can only register a name once. That's why so many actors have changed their names, because, we can't get into it because of time constraints.
Yes. All right. Tune in next time.
Tune in next time when we'll answer all these and many other questions. Dane, thank you so much for filling in for Wendy. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks.
Great to see you. Wendy will be back on Monday. Thank you for listening, everybody. Enjoy your weekend. Bye.